Let's talk about it.
Hello and welcome back to Thick Radio, the podcast where we talk about gaining, feedism, and everything in their orbit. I'm James.
And I'm Tim. So let's get into it. Today, we're welcoming to the show for the first time. Today, we've got Coco.
Hey. Oh, oh my God. An applause for me. Please, please keep it going.
Yes. Oh, yes. Oh my God. Hi. Yes. Oh, we love you. Yeah. Wow. I mean, I don't know what the crowds in China are like, but we'll talk a bit about that. But hi, how are you?
Oh, I'm good. I was just telling you guys before this, I just finished a show. It's a new show that we just started. It's a Barbie themed show. I mean, let's talk about what China took away from watching the Barbie movie, because they did not take away the same message from what everyone else was watching on screen.
Not American producers, it seems. They were like, oh, this is proof we need more toy movies. And then Randall Park had to be like, y'all, it's women directors and women led stories. Like, this is not that difficult. I love how.
Oh God, if they honestly think that we need more toy movies, that means we're going to get another He-Man remake. I guarantee you there'll be another one. They're gonna do another like live action one. I mean, the first one was bad enough, although Dolph Lundgren did look fucking amazing.
Today we are talking to the amazing Coco, who is. I mean, every time I describe you to people, I feel like the descriptive list just goes on and on and on. You're a gorgeous man of color from America, living in China, doing drag, but also a merman. It's just like, if there's anything else that you want to add to this illustrious, like, lengthy description, please speak now and we'll wrap it into the show.
Now I'm just thinking I do too much. Now I see why people, when I yell at people that they're not doing enough, I'm like, oh, maybe it's me. Maybe I am the problem. Okay, you know what? Yeah, I think I do too much. It's fine. That's perfect. We'll cease the list there. We don't have to continue with that.
Well, we're ending the list there for the moment, but you do all these incredible things. And really, that's why we wanted to bring you onto the show, because, of course, you are also delightfully thickums and just operating in a space in the world, being fantastic. And just, I think people need to know more about you. And so really, that's why we want to bring you on today, to just lift you up and tell the people listening to go and support a bitch, because it's worth the time and the money. So are you ready to get into some questions today?
Yes, I am. I'll take the shoe wheel for 500, Alex.
So, well, following on the theme for 500, we have, so you're currently living in China. What prompted the initial relocation?
That's a really good question. Why the hell am I here? I after college, there was a massive recession when we went into university, and I was, God, what year was that? 2009 was when I started university.
Yeah, financial crisis happened 2008 to 2009.
And 2013 was like still in repair kind of a situation. So like once the graduation happened, I was like, all right, I kind of need a job. We need to like sort this out. But the job market was like oversaturated. So I decided to, you know what? I went on Craigslist and I just started looking for random jobs. I do love a Craigslist job. And I found one job that was like, we're looking for mediators in several countries. And so like this, I applied and the company accepted me and they were like, all right, so like we have mediators that are going to be education consultants in several different countries. And of the five like continents that we have, like Europe and South America and North America, the only one that's left is Asia. And we're like, oh, you wrote on your resume that you took Chinese for like 7 years, which I didn't remember shit of Chinese. I think after a certain point, you're just like, I don't need to remember this. I'm never gonna go back to China. There's no point in that. But then the company was like, oh, it's fine. You'll be okay. And they just threw me in China. in Wuxi, China. And so I would travel back and forth every 3 months. I would be there for 3 months building an international program at several different schools. And then I would come back and then do work here and then go back and do more work there. It was a lot of back and forth. And I helped establish like different international schools in like a variety of different East Asian countries. So like South Korea. But for the majority of my work, I was in China. And so like while I was in China, I was like, oh, well, you know what? I gotta not be here for a long period of time. And then I was in Shanghai one day and I was just like, this is a nice place, but there's no like art stuff. And so like I found one drag show one time and I was just like, oh my God, this is incredible and amazing and also really, really bad. And so, so I went in and I was like, I'm gonna do one show, and that's where everything kind of took off.
I don't know many people who think like China is the place to go to, you know? So it's kind of cool to learn that, like, there's that kind of basis of like, you know, that's why we started and why you wound up in that part of the world. But as you say, Coco Santi is really where things start to kind of move forward for you with this art and doing different bits and pieces. And in terms of China, I'm curious to know, like, what was your biggest expectation of China that was affirmed for you? And what was the biggest expectation that you had challenged?
Because I was fortunate enough to study in China in 2007, 2008, when I was in high school, I kind of got over like any kind of culture shock that would have occurred beforehand. Also, like because my sister school, my high school sister school was in Beijing. Beijing is a little bit more, it's much more New York than it is LA. You know what I mean? It's very aggressive and people are very aggressive in your face and they like will tell you as it is. And I love that about Beijing. I really do love Beijing. And so I was anything that I could ever experience in terms of like cultural shock, I was like prepared for when I returned, but I didn't really experience anything out of the norm. Actually, moving to Shanghai, I was very much shocked about how many how international the hub it was. So like this city is so it's mainland China, but it's so closed off from the rest of China. I never refer to it as like all of China because it's so culturally different from its own in its own way. So like there's nothing I can be like shifted. I always tell people if they want to visit China and they want to like slowly ease themselves into it, Shanghai is the place to start. You start in Shanghai and then you like slowly work yourself out. If you want to be really shocked going in, go straight to like Beijing or Guangzhou and you'll be like, oh God, what the hell just happened here?
To cycle back to your drag, so you go by Coco Santi, and
Whoop, whoop.
I just want you to tell us, like, so who is she? What does she do? Is she a look queen? Is she gonna be on? Well, she can't be on Queen of the Universe now because they canceled it after season two. But like, are you gunning for like a Drag Race Asia franchise? Like, tell us things.
Queen of the Universe. My best friend Wu was on it. She was on season one. She's a really great singer, and the producers did her dirty on that show. I just want to throw that out there. If anyone watches Queen of the Universe, she's from Guangzhou, China. She's amazing. She's funny. She's absolutely disgusting. She's the nastiest person I have ever met in my entire life, and it's so funny to watch her be so fucking beautiful all the time. And then she'll turn around and say, like, I was watching a scat video the other day. And I'm just like, what the fuck? Where did that come from? Why does this happen? She's great. She's wonderful. Follow her if you can. But she is like she's the introduction to like Western television in China. And it's really great that she's been able to do that. Me personally, I'm not really a competition person. I've done a couple of competitions. I won one. Hey, what's up? But like, I'm just not, I enjoy entertainment and I enjoy theater and I enjoy performance. Coco Santi is not a look queen. I will never, ever be a look queen. I think to describe like China's drag in a nutshell, China is like 97% look queens. And that's a beautiful thing. Like, you walk down the street, these bitches are gorgeous. They know how to do their face. They know how to like, well, they don't know how to do their padding. That's my thing. But like they definitely know how to like, you know, put on a lash very well. They've got installed wigs, they know what's up, they know how to like tuck shit behind every kind of nook and cranny they got. But I heavily rely on my ability to perform, and I heavily rely on my ability to entertain. And personally, I'm an individual who likes going to a drag show and not just looking at something and being in awe. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to just sit there and look at something that's like, oh, it's another skinny bitch walking around and pointing on the stage. I don't want that. I'm tired of that. I was tired of that when I started drag, and I'm still tired of it now. But, you know, when I go out and I perform, I'm doing it as my character, Coco, and I enjoy my character. She's just an extension of me. She just actually, everything that I say and think and have already done in my life, when I say it as Coco, people always laugh about it. But if I say it as me, they take offense to it. So I just kind of use Coco as like a language translator for a lot of
I like that.
cases.
And I mean,
Yeah.
we talked about this a little bit before because you are friends with Turing from season 1 of Drag Race Philippines. And bitch, when I tell you, I live for that hoe because she is the reason that Pop Off Ate was such an incredible song. Honestly, in my opinion, like, and I know they do like a lot of music on Drag Race now and it's hard to keep up, but Pop Off Ate has to be one of the best tracks produced on Drag Race on any franchise ever. So if you haven't heard it and you hadn't seen it, please go do, because that's fantastic. But Turing's a big bitch. And, you know, Tim, because you're from Cleveland, the only queen, I believe, on any Drag Race franchise ever that's from Cleveland is Akasha from season 1.
Yeah, that's we've only had the one.
But I mean, she's a pretty fierce performer. Like,
Yeah, she always has been.
she sent Pork Chop home, she sent Tammy home. And I think she sent one other. No, sorry, she didn't. She sent those two home, and then Chanel sent her home on the third up. Girl,
Yeah.
why do I remember this? Why am
I
I?
don't know. I don't remember it.
Why
I
am I?
remember she was on it, and I remember that she didn't really get to do a whole lot. Like, she didn't get to show what she's actually capable of. Like, you guys should see her when she's actually dressed up as Akasha from Queen of the Damned. Like, she's got the whole nine yards. She has the whole costume, and like, she really looks like Aaliyah when she paints herself like that.
So on that topic of drag, like how would you, because I know you said that China drag and, you know, to a wider extent, I suppose Asian drag, because we had the same conversation around touring when we were watching Philippines. Asian drag is very focused on like the beauty aesthetics. Like how otherwise does it dip? I say otherwise as if American queens are busted. But how does it majorly differ from American drag?
The US is just a massive country. I think people always take it for granted because, you know, it's a shit country, but it's a massive country. And I fully understand when people like decide not to travel outside of the country because we have so much geographical difference in each of our states that like people can go to, you know, a Mediterranean spot like in Florida, or they can hit up like a cool beach in California, or maybe they can pick some blueberries in fucking Maine. All of our, you know, there's just so much difference in not only in our geography, but like in the makeup of our states that like everyone has a different mindset like for where they come from. So like me coming from the Northeast, I'm so familiar with like performance, like theatrical performance, and something that is rooted in, I don't want to say this pretentiously, but we're smart. We're smart people in the Northeast. We're very smart. We're overeducated and absolutely fucking mental. That's the Northeast. We're miserable all the time and we hate it. But hey, you get some of the best drag queens from the Northeast, from New York, from Boston. Boston, what's up? We got Jujubee, we got Katya, who I saw when I was younger. And trust me, if they had like 100% potential to do whatever they wanted on like RuPaul's Drag Race when they were on the show, they probably would have won. Because there are times like there's just nasty ass performances. And that's what I love to see. I love to see like gritty shit. You know what I mean? Real conversations on stage. A conversation that's political, that's irreverent, that's like so strange and like out there. And then you can easily go to the West Coast and then find like queens that will just like graze across the stage and just look so fucking magnificent that it's hard to keep your eyes off of them because they're just so like beautiful to look at. They're all models, they're all plasticked out. Or you can go to the south and see like a fucking beauty pageant where they will literally stare daggers at each other. And that's my favorite kind of that's my favorite kind of like drag competition is those beauty pageants, because those bitches look like they're ready to fight on stage with their big ass bouffants. Oh my God, they're so good. So we just have such a great collection of drag and drag artistry in the US.
When it comes to your drag, do you feel like there are aspects where you've had to either make yourself more palatable to local audiences, or have you been more inclined to challenge local audiences with your drag?
Well, first and foremost, I'm an educator because I have my master's in education. So I care about what people are learning. And also, I just don't give a fuck. I'm very much like, this is what I'm gonna do. This is what I'm bringing to the table. If you don't like it, I'm sorry. You don't have to pay me. You can find someone else, but there's no one better than me. So my, like, I started doing bearded drag because I missed like what I saw back home. Like, people were less concerned about the aesthetic and more concerned about like the performance. And so when I started doing it here, I kind of introduced, this makes me sound really high and mighty, but I really did introduce like a lot of an alternative form of drag to the scene in China. And that really kickstarted a lot of people doing more and more varieties of drag and being introduced to like other things before, you know, before they started seeing Dragula or even Camp Wanakiki. Like, they this kind of like kicked it off for a lot of people. And it was nice to see people, like, it still is nice to see people experimenting with their own form of drag.
But to pivot
Yeah.
here, you are also a merman, which how'd that happen?
Well, after the first lockdown, I was like, oh God, I just want to do something. And so I just did mermaiding. During the first lockdown, I found like an Instagram of someone doing mermaiding, and I was just like, oh, that seems really fun. I want to try that. Because I enjoy swimming. I like to swim. And I have dove before, and I've done scuba before, but I've never actually like gotten licensed to do it. So as soon as the lockdown opened up, I was just like, I'm gonna go get my license to do all these things, because people they needed money. They were just like, we gotta recuperate money. So there were so many things on sale. You could just go around and people were like, well, we gotta sell these things. They're out of season. Or like, we gotta get rid of these beautiful homes because no one is buying them. They've all left. And so I was just like, oh, diving sale? Let's do that. And then I bought a mertail and I was just like, this is really fun. This is a great experience. But mermaiding for me is like, people think drag is a really enjoyable thing, but I am molding and shaping my body every night, and it hurts. It like physically hurts my body every day to be molded like fucking Gumby. And I just need time to relax. And mermaiding is just such a great way to relax for me. You're just, when you're under the water, everything is just so calm and soothing, and you hear like muffled noises that like reverberate. You learn how to control your breathing, and it just feels so, oh, it's just so calming to me. Meanwhile, I brought my friend with me to go mermaiding, and she had a full-blown conniption under the water. She was just like panicking every time, and she's just like, fuck, I can't do it. I can't hold my breath for a minute. It's never gonna happen. It's gonna be awful. She was not the best person to do that with. It just freaked me out.
Well, I would like to try mermaiding, so if I end up visiting you at China at some point, throw me a tail, girl, and we'll go for a little dip.
Yes, please. I'm the only plus-size mermaid in China, and they hold international mermaiding competitions here in China. So like, people come from all over the world to go swim in these massive like aquarium tanks. I swim in them all the time. But like, for competition, they're always looking for like the skinniest, the whitest looking people. And it's very bias based. And it's like, some of the performers are not great, but just because they look beautiful, it's just it's boring. It's annoying. And it just reminds me again of drag, which is why I don't do competitions for a lot of things, because there's so much bias behind artistry competitions that I don't like. I don't like the politics behind art. You know what I mean? It's just too much.
It's something that I think is really worth dipping into. It's something I think that's really important to dip into here is because I don't believe you identify as a gainer necessarily, but you are someone who is, I think, certainly plus size and fits into a lot of what would typically be considered like chub or bear spaces because of your shaping. And I'm curious to ask here, like, between mermaiding and drag and living in China and being a man of color, like, what does that do for you in terms of the plus size experience? Do you feel that one or more of those labels or spaces helps you to feel more at peace with your body? Do they challenge you in any way? What is that like doing and existing at all of those intersections?
It's really hard, especially in China. I want to say specifically China, because hell, if I go to Japan, oh wee, people in Japan love them some bears and love them some chubby boys, and they will like be so happy when you walk into a club. Everyone just really enjoys like a nice petting and a little bit of chub rub. But like China specifically is very much in the mindset of like straight sized individuals or petite individuals taking up space. And so when I present myself in a space that is drag, or mermaiding, or even in the workplace, I'm brown, which is already a huge strike against me in China because fair skin is what the expectation is. When they're looking for foreigners to do acting roles or anything, they always look for white people. They'll say it specifically in their promotions. So like white haired native English speaker. And so and they'll even take a white before they'll take a native English speaker to do educational stuff. I'm plus size. This is a huge no-no or misunderstanding in China. I think now, since 2019, more than half of the population is now considered obese. But like that's because KFC was introduced like 4 or 5 years ago into China, and people were like, shit, fried chicken, this is the bomb. And so like people are experiencing this in their own way very slowly, but like it's still like even within the bear community, which I've seen it take shape in the US recently as well. Back in the day, the bear community was very open with just letting people be in their space. They were inviting and welcoming, no matter your shape or size. They were just excited to have like people who were happy to be with them, like they were just chill people. And nowadays it's very gatekeepy and very much like if you don't fit this look of a bear, you cannot sit here at this table with us. And that is not what I know growing up as being part of the bear community. The bear community has always been like a welcoming space.
Tim, I know I usually throw back to you in these types of conversations as a bit of an elder statesman. You've also been in like the leather community and the bear community and operating in these spaces for a long time. Like, do you see that happening a lot, like even in Cleveland, where it's that kind of, I guess, more specific aesthetic that's becoming an expectation in these types of spaces?
No, I don't think that Cleveland is going to be included in that conversation because I feel like it's just not placing on the map, honestly. It might someday, but
But
no,
not.
I and I and to, to be completely fair, I don't have my pulse on or my finger on the pulse of what is going on in the drag scene in Cleveland. It's rare for me to go out anymore, and when I do, if there happens to be a drag show going on, then I may catch what the current queens are doing. But like I'm kind of still in this sort of bygone era of the dance club, that had like more cocaine and jizz on the floor than anything else. And like, the queens were all look queens, and like it's just, I'm still kind of stuck in that world.
It's interesting when I think about the gainer community and this conversation around body and aesthetic expectations, right? Because when I first joined the community about 10 years ago, it was very much, and still is in many ways, about being the fattest you can possibly be, meeting people and eating and growing and feeding and eating and growing and eating and growing and eating and growing. But especially in the last few years, there's been this introduction of this expectation with muscle. And muscle gaining, to be very clear here, is a very firm part of the community. We've done several episodes focusing and centering muscle gainers. It is very much a thing, and it is in itself distinct from powerlifting and bodybuilding and the Mr. Olympus style of thing, right? It's its own thing. That's not a problem. But something I am noticing is this generalized expectation of muscle, and I think it's this blending of the powerlifting community coming together with gays. You see this happening with a lot of gay men now. It's no longer just going to the gym, it's no longer being natty. It's this idea of going on a cycle, and it's this idea of becoming the biggest, most swole thing that you can be. So now you've got a lot of muscle guys who are infiltrating the gainer spaces, being like, oh, look, I'm getting fat. But they're not really getting fat. They're just off season and making pigs of themselves, and they maybe gain 10 pounds and then they lose it all when they go back to weightlifting. And then everyone goes, oh my God, how did this happen? Why did I fall for this yet again? Because we're not paying attention to these things. And it's something curious, I think. Like, part of the upsell of the gainer community, and I think for a lot of plus size people, because there are a lot of civilians, right, in the gainer community. I think the upsell is that it's a community that basically says you could be pure blubbery fat with no intention to lose weight, no intention to go to the gym. You just want to sit on your ass, play video games, and eat shit all day, and people will love you for who you are. And that is absolutely true. But it feels like a lot of other queer spaces, there is this homogenization going on, which happens all the time, it seems, where it gets enough people, and then people decide to whittle it down and say, okay, we're the true core members, and everyone else can get fucked off. And that's gross, and I hate it, and it's dumb, and I don't like it. So if you're listening and you do that, please stop. Yeah, bury that. But to circle back to the mermaid thing, so you've been a mermaid then for just a couple of years. Like, what actually goes into mermaiding? Like, obviously we see the videos. Like, you whack on a tail, you go for a little swimmity swim, you're sort of paddling around in the pool or the aquarium tank. But what else is there to that? Or is there anything else? Are people reading too much into it? Are there too many expectations? Do you have mer sex? Like, what's the go?
Oh, I never even thought about that. Like, I don't consider it. I mean, I'm not trying to make a big generalization towards the furry community, but like, you know, there's no sexual component. As far as I'm familiar with it, there's no like sexual component to like the mer community. I mean, there probably is. There's probably a ton of, you know, like fish fucking underwater somewhere. I'm just not
But what if you don't
privy to
live near a
that.
large body of water? Is it just the two of you in a bathtub rubbing your fins together?
Going more like a
Arr, oh no, really cold
Because
ninja.
that's gonna get really like you're gonna get water all over the floor.
I mean, that's true. That's why they usually use like a puddle on the side of the street. Usually a pothole puddle is really nice. When people
Oh
go to fuck.
no. Do you say or nor a lot or not?
Oh no. No, I have an Australian friend here, and her daughter has an American accent for some reason, even though both of our parents are Australian.
Oh,
But
that's
every time she says, oh no, it's always that, and especially when she gets splashed with water, and she had to break that down for me. And then we ended up watching all of H2O, and I was like, what the fuck
water.
is this?
You don't know. You are not a homosexual until you've seen H2O just add water. It's so gay, and it's so Australian, and it's
Okay.
hilarious because I was 10, 11, 12 years old and like operating in those areas as a child. So, you know, I've seen the people that are around there, and they've sat on the beach so long that they've bleached all the intellect out of their brains. But that's surfer's paradise for you. But so
Okay.
mermaiding, like, I've and
Yeah.
again, there's a separate Instagram for this, people. And when we get to the socials at the end, you'll see, because our good girl Coco looks so thick and so juicy. Like, you know how like there's the new Little Mermaid film, and like, I want King Daddy Triton to shove it up my asshole. He's so hot. I also feel that way about you when you've got a tail on.
Oh, thank you. That's exactly what I'm going for. I'm going for like, let me just shove my Triton everywhere in every crevice.
Please. Look at
There's
this.
not a lot.
Isn't it neat?
There's.
Wouldn't you think that my asshole's complete? Wouldn't you think I'm the guy who's taken everything?
That's hot. It's tough.
Including a pitchfork up your ass, because that's not comfortable.
Listen, Linda. You showed me the review for that one movie where the guy had like a transdimensional portal up his asshole and he was kidnapping
I
children.
didn't say that that was a good
Oh
movie.
my
I just wanted you to
God,
be aware of it
yes.
existed.
It does exist. It's Butt Boy.
Yeah,
It's
Butt Boy.
crazy. Oh
It's
my
this. It's it's
God.
literally the most idiotic film that I've ever seen. But
And it's the
oh
special
my God.
effects of him, like the car being trying to be sucked into his ass. Like that is just like
I
what
love it.
even is this?
I love bad movies. If you guys ever decide to do thick movies in a bad movie, or thick movies, yes, that's what you should call it. Just watch bad movies while eating. That I'll be down for
I've been
that
wanting to do that with him for a long time. Like I said, the next thing I want to do is some kind of review series because there's a lot of films he still hasn't been introduced to.
And there's a lot of films I just don't like because I think they're absolutely trash and I just go off about them. Like,
Oh, please. You're from Australia. I've seen the trash that comes out of Australian television. What was that TV show? The Tribe, was it? With these like fucking feral children running about and like throwing shit. It was like
They
the
did a
Grapes of
they did a
Wrath.
Lord of the Flies TV show.
Are they probably?
Yes, but in Australia it was terrible. It's
I never
Australian
saw that.
television.
I heard of it. I'd never seen it.
Yeah.
Listen, girly, I grew up in the 90s, so I grew up on Ocean Girl, I grew up on Parallax and Round the Twist, bitch. So like we got the best of it. Don't you be
These
coming for my
don't
brand.
sound any
Yeah, well,
better.
I grew up on Are You Afraid of the Darks? And yeah. Well, you haven't seen any of American Nickelodeon television shows from the 90s, so.
Which, once again, if you guys are going to be reviewing any of those, please let me join in on one of episodes. I will be very willing to watch it. From
Well,
Hey Arnold to Are You Afraid of the Dark is I'm all there. I'm there.
I've always wanted to live in Arnold's room. Like that was so cool, like the skylight and everything.
I got excited when I found out that all that is on Netflix.
This is
Yeah.
unfair. This is unfair. Yeah.
And the good seasons too, not that shit that happened later on.
Oh, you're talking about when the redhead from Pete and Pete joined the cast?
No, not that one. No, he was fine. There's
Oh.
later. There's later than that. It's much
Oh,
later.
was
It's
that
much
when
later.
Jamie Lynn was on it?
Yes,
Yeah, that was a bad season.
Oh,
That just was unnecessary.
speaking of which, do y'all now, Tim? I've told you about this, but Coco, do you listen to the Vulnerable podcast by Christy Carlson Romano?
I do not.
Oh my
Should
God.
I?
You should. Christy Carlson Romano, aka Kim Possible, bitch. So
I
basically,
know.
a podcast where she's interviewing people who are like either former child stars or like, current TikTok stars, but they're very, very young people. And it's a lot of it kind of unpacking what's it like behind the scenes. And so, like, there was a really awesome episode with Corey Feldman, a really cool episode with Mara Wilson. And she recently did one with Annalise van der Poel, aka Chelsea from That's So Raven. And they've now got a new podcast together themselves. Like, it's just really, really interesting. A lot of that behind the scenes tea, especially when they talk about drug addiction and alcohol problem and like how things for child actors just are not stacked up in their favor to have any kind of success on that front. Very, very interesting stuff. Very, very much the deep dive, worth the listen. To circle back, I do want to ask you, is being a merman basically water drag?
I mean, everything is drag, right? RuPaul said that. Everything is drag.
He
I'm naked right now, so I have no drag on. But I do believe that, like, whatever you're donning, whatever clothing you're putting on a mask to prepare yourself for the world. So I guess, yeah, I'm mer-dragging a little bit. And I highly recommend, especially if people love the water, to just try mermaiding. It's just so chill. And it's so different from just like regular free diving. It's so different from scuba. There's a little bit of a fear that, my fear going in was like my legs are bound. So like I don't know what's gonna happen if I go 20 meters underwater and I have to
I'll
get
tell you
back up
what,
really quickly.
James. We can give it a try. You can be the one to actually get in the water. I'm just going to sit on a rock, smoking a cigarette, drinking a beer, and I'm going to be like that mermaid that's seen some shit,
That's what the statue in Denmark looks like, right? The little
Yeah.
mermaid just holding a beer and a cigarette. It's like, ooh,
I
not going back there.
mean,
You know, as a mixed race man, it does entertain me sometimes. Like, depending on what Tim talks about, like certain attributes and flavors tend to rise in the conversation. So of course, when you describe that merman who's seen some shit sitting there smoking a cigarette, I'm like, okay, she's coding in a very certain way. And I live when Tim gives us a little taste of what's going on in the background there.
It's because I've talked to a lot of Vietnam vets.
Are there aspects of like drag or mer stuff that we haven't touched on yet that you want to bring up for the listeners?
In terms of drag, I am a very firm believer that drag is for everyone. The stage may not be. So it's okay if you are not a stage performer. Get dressed up in drag anyway. That's totally fine. I mean, I just feel like there are times when people are living for themselves and doing the greatest thing that they can do, but then when it gets to actually moving forward in that career that they're creating for themselves, and they get so frustrated and asking questions like how can I be a better performer? Like, why am I not getting all these gigs? Why am I not doing the thing that I need to do? I think it's okay to reflect and be honest with yourself. And I tell people this all the time. You need to be honest with yourself with what your weaknesses are. It's so easy to find what our strengths are, but we need to know where we are weak, and we need to know when to either ask for help, when to figure out how we can improve on what we're doing, and when to just maybe recognize that maybe that weakness is not going to be growing anytime soon. You know what I mean? Like, if you're not a great stage performer, but you feel your oats when you're on stage, that's great. You got to pick and choose performance spaces for that. But don't get upset if no one's inviting you to a professional stage because you're not ready for it. You got to wait for that time. And in terms of mermaiding, I'm speaking directly to my thickums out there. There's a community in the US called the Fat Mermaid Society. Follow them on Instagram if you can. They are wonderful. They are great. They're so sweet. They are so inviting to all sizes of merfolk. But most importantly, they provide spaces for people all over the world to like really just be themselves. And if you decide to do mermaiding for the first time, you need to remember fat floats. Fat just floats. Y'all need to weigh yourself down, and it's okay to put on mad buckles. And it's gonna feel really scary that you're actually putting weight on your body in order to sink. But that's normal because your body is naturally trying to save you at all costs. So you let that fat save you when you need it to. But if you want to go deep diving, you got to put on some weights because you won't be able to go down. You won't be able to go down at all. Oh my God, it was terrible. First time I was in a saltwater tank, I was just like, oh, I'm not in a pool. I just went straight down. In salt water, that shit was just trying to keep me up. I was wasting so much energy. And then there was a shark coming, and I was just like, nope, this is where danger
Wait a minute, they
is.
let you swim with sharks?
Yeah, oh yeah, I swim in China. There's so many spaces where you can just like rent out places in aquariums, but I'm invited to aquariums because I'm very
Okay, I ain't
anti-natural.
swimming with a shark, sorry.
But no, they're totally fine. They're
Yeah,
so
I
sweet.
know, but
It's
it's yeah, I've seen every Jaws movie and every Open Water and that stupid Shallows movie. I ain't swimming with a shark.
It's okay, don't worry about
Coco baby, I've told
it.
this one about taking him to Australia. When I tell you, this grown ass man.
Because everything in your country wants to kill you. The birds, the insects, the reptiles, the mammals, everything wants to kill you.
That's actually true. When I went to Perth, when I saw that fucking, we went to a reser, I don't know, a reservation or a zoo topia kind of fucking place. They don't call them zoos, but it's definitely like a zoo. But like there was just a cage, like a wire cage that separated me and this bat that was the size of my fucking forearm. It was massive, and it was just hanging out. And I was just like, that thing looks like it will eat me. That was a massive bat, and I don't understand Australia or why they exist in general. And I find it so funny that y'all are just like, don't bring anything into the country. We don't need like rabies or like a, heaven forbid you bring a peach into the country and then you ruin everything that we have here. I don't know how the rest of the fucking things that live there don't ruin everything that you have there. They're crazy. It's crazy. It's too much. It's too much. Gotta get rid of them.
Australia is a lot, not gonna lie to you. But
And I'm
it's
telling you, the first time that a magpie dives at me, I'm taking a baseball bat to it.
good luck. The baseball bat won't survive, but good luck to
Oh, no. I will prove a point to that bird. You will not attack
You're
me.
so cute. You think you're gonna prove a point to a
Okay, that bird has never met me. Okay? That's
magpie.
what I'm saying. That bird has never met me. That bird might meet its match.
Girl, you're so cute. But listen,
Just don't let the pacifism fool you. I'm not an easy win.
come on, nutty professor. Come on, grandma.
Oh,
I knew what you was quoting. But no, like, I think that's a cute place to leave the episode. But I think this has been such a cool little exploration. I mean, like we said at the beginning, you are such a diverse individual, doing so many different things, living in such a unique part of the world. You know, I think you have so much to share. I love learning about it. And I think if there is one takeaway that our listeners can take from this, is that you can be big, beautiful, and do it all. You don't need to allow any expectations of society to prevent you from doing the drag you want, doing the art you want, going swimming, doing anything. You can literally have your cake and eat it too. So, dear listeners, I hope you have enjoyed this week's episode. But for now, Coco, my darling, where can our listeners find you online? And make sure to give us the socials for both the dragginess and the mermaidiness.
You can find my drag Instagram at Fresh Coco Santi. And you can find my mer Instagram at Orca underscore royalty.
But do you have anything else you want to promote? Any, do you have any shows or any live streams or any Patreon-only fans? Any
What are you guys coming to? If anyone comes to China anytime soon, just message me, DM me on my Instagram. I'll get you a free ticket to a show. Come and see my fucking shows that I sometimes really hate to put on, but I have to do it anyway because it's my working job now. I don't have any OnlyFans. Should I get one? Should we have
I would
one?
like you to, but I feel like I've expressed this to you before. Like, if you don't want to bother with that, just use my DM, our DMs as your OnlyFans
Totally
review
fine.
space, and I will happily provide constructive feedback, which will basically just be me doing like the hot face icon every time, just like, oh.
Perfect.
But that's a wrap for now here on Thick Radio. Please remember to like and subscribe, rate us 5 stars, and leave us a good review. If you liked this episode, the podcast, or just us in general, share it with your friends and encourage them to tune in. You can find me on Instagram, Beefy Frat, Stuff and Show, and Oh My Dom at Stanham.
And you can find me on Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, TikTok, and Beefy Frat at Thicky Mouse. You can also look us up on YouTube and TikTok at Thick Radio or at our website at www.podpage.com/thickradio. If you want to submit a voice note or become a supporter of the show, you can find the links in the show notes. And if you have any questions or ideas for episodes, you can reach us at thethickradio@gmail.com. So until next time, bye, fats.
Bye, fats.
Bye, fats. Bye, fatties. I love you all. I want to smush you all. I just want to lick them. That's what I want to do. I want to lick everyone.
Let's talk about it.
Thick Radio is a Patreon and Enter App podcast, produced by Stan and Dicky Mouse.
Mixed and mastered by Stan.
Our artwork is provided by Loki 2.
Our theme song is provided by Bonfire Cream.